Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is J. Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we will answer your questions and talk about estate planning, Medicaid planning, guardianships, trust administration, probate, all kinds of good things. And it is a call-in show, so we do welcome your call. You can call in at 518-476-5900, and we will take your questions. And so, Kim, how are you? It's a pretty cold morning.
It is a pretty cold. We were just talking about how chilly it is outside. But, you know, in spite of everything, I'm good. And how are you?
I am good. I said I'm warmer because it's above zero here. It's below zero where you are. So.
That's right. and
in January, right?
Yep. Well, and we've actually been lucky, you know. It hasn't been that bad of a winter, as far as winters go, and cold and things like that. So I'm not complaining.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad. And that kind of reminds me of a new seminar we have this month, because in the cold, I know many people have they flee the Albany area, right, for a few months.
Yeah.
Right? We call them snowbirds. They usually try and find somewhere warmer. So in this month's week of webinars, we have a new webinar called Estate Tax and Asset Preservation Considerations for a Dual Residence Client. So there, you know, are certain things you do have to think about when you're planning if you spend, you know, part of your year in another state. So this is a really great new webinar. I'm excited to present it, and it's going to, you know, be interesting for those of us who travel back and forth.
Yeah, no, I was excited that we were adding it because, you know, as often as we talk to our clients, sometimes things like that get forgotten. So it is nice to be able to think ahead, particularly if you're someone who's thinking that might be something you want to do. You know, because not everybody gives up a primary residence, and there are some things that you have to think about from that planning perspective as to what you want to do.
Yeah, there's some legal planning you need to do besides all the, you know, regular planning about leaving your house for the winter, making sure it's fit. You know, we had we have an estate, I should say, going on this week where there's no one around to check on the house. So with this cold weather, we're worried about pipes bursting.
Yeah. So no, there are lots of things to consider in that realm.
Right. So that's something that we were on the phone with the person who fixed the boiler and the plumber. So, you know, that's just one more job you have if you're an executor of an estate.
Very true. And if you don't live locally, it makes it even more challenging, right? And being able to set those things up and really even know where to go to start that can be a little challenging.
Yes, that's right. So something to think about when you're picking your executor for your estate. I mean, if you have someone local, that's great. Really can avoid some of those problems.
Right.
Speaking of webinars, we have two coming up this Wednesday. The always popular Aging in Place on Wednesday at 10 o'clock. Really becoming one of our most popular ones about how to stay home and receive care and not have to go into an institution. And it's a lot of clients are telling me that they really want to do that because if their family member goes into a nursing home, they can't visit them, right? Or if they're in some assisted living, they can't visit them. So it's even more important to keep them home, you know, because of the COVID restrictions. That's why they can't get in the nursing home.
Right.
And then the second one is how to plan your estate. And it's an estate plan is a roadmap. I like that. So it's going to talk about all the documents you need to put in place to have everything set for your estate. And that's at 2. And you can register for these webinars on our website at www.herzoglaw.com. Or you can call the office at 518-476-7581 and ask to speak to Stacy, and she'll sign you up.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so aging in place, that's the one where we do talk about community Medicaid. And, you know, you've heard us talk about some changes in community Medicaid and a look back period. And there's some good news in the midst of that bad news is that we were thinking April 1st would be the day they would implement those changes. And now we understand it's been pushed back to July 1st. Right,
which is really huge for, you know, a lot of people. You know, even more recently, I think we've been getting more folks. You know, it's interesting. You know, COVID's been going on a year, right? And I think I personally know more and more people in our area who have been affected. Where the first, even, you know, 8 months, I didn't really have. You know, I'd heard of people, but now I definitely have more personal connections. But we've had more people, inquiring because somebody who's, you know, contracted it that was in their 70s, it's really kind of sped up some of their other issues that they were having that maybe they were okay. And so they're now having to think about long-term care, needing some help a little bit. So it's interesting how all of this has sort of accelerated the need for that.
Right, because if it can make some of your other medical problems worse, right, and so you may need more care when you go back home. You know, we're just seeing a lot of people needing that home care. There's lots of ways we can help you get that. We had a good webinar we did this week about how not to pay for your care, right? That was great. And Kim, you talked about a lot of solutions in the community that you don't have to pay for that can help support you at home.
Right. Because so often, people don't have to jump right into having a, you know, home help aide come in to take care of them, but they do need a lot of others. Sort of supportive services. You know, transportation is a big thing because, you know, as we get older, we may not be able to, you know, maybe driving to the CVS or to the grocery store is okay, but doing some, you know, maybe medical appointments where your provider is a little further away, and or maybe just driving altogether is not a great idea. So, you know, we talk about all of those other options that are out there that really help support folks. I mean, one of my favorite services to utilize is the Northeastern Association for the Blind, because, you know, they really do focus on coming into the home and helping people with, you know, low vision or no vision adapt and work with them to fit their home with different kinds of technology or, help rearrange the house so it's a little more usable and movable for someone who doesn't have great vision, and really work with them to kind of help retrain them on how to do things so that they can stay independent and not have to have care in. So it's utilizing a lot of services like that sometimes is a great stopgap or even a bridge if we are looking at doing some long-term care planning. And, you know, care is a progression, and long-term care is a progression, and so it's good to start thinking about that ahead of time and some of the things that you can do to make your environment more adaptable to your needs.
I was going to say my favorite one that you talk about is the, I'm going to get the name wrong, is it Go Granny or Granny Go or the car service?
The Go Grandparent. Yeah.
Oh, that's it.
Yep, and that's just, it's starting to catch on. It's a division of Uber, and it is, what's nice about it, it works like Uber, except that our participants, you know, our clients, you don't need an app to make it work, right? Because so many of our older clients don't, they're not smartphone savvy, if you will, and so it's a phone number that you call, but you pre-register, so they know you, they know what your needs are. And say, for example, like me, my parents, I'm a long distance caregiver. My parents live in North Carolina. So if I were to sign them up for Go-Go Grandparent, I could just call and say, my dad has an appointment on Tuesday at, 2:30. And they would already have all of his information. They would be there to pick him up. But I have an app, and my app shows when they pick him up. I can watch them on a map, where they go. And, it'll say, your loved one's dropped off, your loved one's picked up. It's really nice. So it gives me the ability to kind of track what's happening sort of in live time. And the drivers are vetted. They go through an extra layer of vetting to make sure that they're not just some, person that's going to scam. Or if something happens, they have an extra layer of security, which is which is really nice, for folks.
I think that's fantastic, because especially in the winter, a lot of our parents or grandparents shouldn't be driving, or they may be hesitant about driving. And they still have doctor's appointments they need to get to, right? They still need to go to groceries or something like that. So this is really a great way to help them get those rides that they need.
Right. And they even do delivery service too. So they'll pick up and deliver your groceries, and they will deliver, say like restaurant meals and things like that. I mean, there are other apps out there like Grubhub but those things get a little confusing to use, and this is just a little bit, it just takes the personal level of service up a notch, if you will, which is nice.
Right. All these things that you can, these little things you can do can help you stay at home for longer, which is what we talk about with our clients.
Right. And it's, that is one of my favorite webinars to talk about, because there's so many things out there that, and we might not necessarily even associate with aging in place, if you will, but they're just other things that help support that independent lifestyle for folks. So it is one of my favorites to do.
Yes, that's right. Right. There's lots of different services you can do even before you get to Medicaid. If you do need help and you're thinking that you're going to need Medicaid pretty soon, what we're recommending now is that you go ahead and apply for community Medicaid before the rules change. Because after July 1st now, there will be a 2.5-year look-back period, and they're going to look back at any transfers or gifts that you made during that time. And if you did make any transfers, you will have a penalty period you'll have to wait out, where you won't be eligible for Medicaid. So we do have some solutions to work around that, but if you can not have to deal with that at all, that's the best thing to do. There's still time. You could set up a trust now, and you could apply for community Medicaid now, now meaning before July 1st, and be approved. You have a little time to wait until you start the services. So if you're kind of thinking you have someone who may need it, they could use maybe a little bit of help now, but they're going to need more help in the future, why not get the Medicaid in place, right? And then you can always increase your hours later on, right?
Right. As we often talk about, applying for and getting Medicaid and the services don't happen overnight. So just if it's something that you think even within the next, 6 to 8 months, it's good to get started, because the process really can, it can take a while, and it can be a frustrating process. And, the other thing that we talk about is even without a pandemic, we have a caregiver shortage in the area, and well, everywhere actually. And, you add a pandemic on top of it, and, people are worried about having others come into their home, or, caregivers are getting sick, their families are getting sick. So quarantine, we've experienced that a little bit in the office. I mean, we've been, I think, very lucky in our office that we've all sort of, been well for, there's been an occasional quarantine, because you can't always you know, help if you've been exposed to something. So, you know, when your main caregiver gets exposed and then it has to quarantine for at least 2 weeks, like that really puts a huge burden on, you know, a family that really is relying on that caregiver to show up every day to take care of somebody. Mm-hmm. So lots of things to kind of think about and consider when you're doing that planning.
Right. So that's going to lead me to talking about consumer-directed personal assistance, because that kind of helps you out with that problem. So consumer-directed is where it's a Medicaid program that pays for people to help take care of you. But the difference is that you can find and hire the people who work for you. So you could hire your neighbor, your, you know, your niece, you know, it could be friends and family members. And they get paid by Medicaid. So that can help cut down on the, you know, perhaps the risk of someone, you know, exposing themselves. You know, presumably you know these people better and you know what they're, where they're going when they're not working. So you can be, feel safer about the COVID risk if you're hiring your neighbor, for example.
Jay Marie and Kim, we have a caller on the line. We have Carol, Carol from Schenectady.
Hi, good morning, Carol.
And good morning to you as well. Could you tell me the age where you have to start taking pre-tax funds out, withdrawing from there?
Yes, from your retirement plan?
Yes.
You it's 72 now. It, for many, many, many years, it was when the year in which you turned age 70 and one half.
Right.
But they pushed it back to 72.
That's great. I'm approaching that age. Yeah, I'm just about there. So I'm thinking, oh, that's so great that they pushed it back. So now I'm wondering what to do with that 401k. I've heard that some people roll them over into annuities. Could you tell me the best thing to do?
I can tell you in general about that. I don't do financial planning. I do, you know, but I know a lot of people take the money out of the 401k and they put it, and you can roll it over to an IRA. And that's because you may have more options with the IRA in terms of where to invest it.
Okay.
And then some people choose an annuity because an annuity gives you a fixed amount and a set interest rate. So that's, you know, maybe some level of security for you. But you really talk to someone who sells annuities to understand all the nuances of that.
Okay. All right. So I was watching a show. I was watching Susie Orman the other night, and she said there were pros and cons of an annuity, and I got interrupted. And so I'll have to dig into that.
Yeah, there's some downsides. I mean, I don't know what she was going to say, but I think because you're locked into it, right, for X amount of years, so you can't change the investments, you can't get out of it. And then the fees, you have to know what the fees are. That's always something you need to see.
Okay, yeah, because once you turn that over to an annuity, you don't have that money available to you, right?
No, you don't. Yeah, you don't. It's locked in an annuity, so that is a downside that you can't change your mind on how you want to invest it.
Right. But the pro side of it is that you get so much money every month.
That's correct. It's a fixed amount, so you're not worried about the stock market going up and down, for example.
Exactly. So I guess what it hinges on is your health and how long your longevity.
Yes. And your tolerance for the stock market. Not all of us have the stomach to take the ups and downs, right?
Right.
Right. Okay. You shouldn't be in retirement, right? So.
Yes. Absolutely. Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure. Thank you for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So that was actually an interesting call. Well, it was a good call or a good question. And I was just going to say that it's confusing, right? Because there's so many things that you have to think about when you're planning for your retirement. I mean, you want to think about your cash flow, right? You want to make sure you have enough and that you can do what you want to do. But you know, so many of the things that we talk about are preserving those assets and making sure that, you know, you don't have to spend them all on if there's an incident of when you need, you know, to have some type of long-term care. And, you know, where good decisions for taxes and longevity of having funds available might not really match up with, you know, a long-term care plan. So those are always trying to make those things work together is, it's really, you know, we do a lot of creative thinking when we're talking to clients about that sort of thing.
We do. And we also like to, get on the, you know, team up with your financial advisor if you have one. Because sometimes people have a financial advisor who's doing something different that isn't really, doesn't really know what your lawyer's doing. It's better if everyone's on the same page and they know what you're trying to accomplish so we can all work together towards the same thing. And we're pretty much happy to work with your financial person to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, there are lots of things out there that like, from a financial world that, you know, we have a hint at, but we don't know, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's good for us to be able to say, you know, from this perspective, this is what we're looking at. And, I mean, I'm actually working with a financial planner right now because his clients are, I mean, they have a you know, a very good net worth, and they have a long-term care policy. And the husband is starting to need, you know, he was just recently diagnosed with dementia and has some needs. And so, you know, we're going to be meeting on Monday to kind of talk about their long-term care policy and when it would make sense to utilize it and all of that. And it's interesting because they're actually snowbirds, but they have a New York State partnership plan. So, you know, we've been kind of talking about how all of that works right too, because it means your assets are protected in New York. I mean, yes, he can use the policy in Florida if he were to need care and those kinds of things. But when it comes to nursing home, he would probably have to come back to New York to utilize that policy, you know? So it's just interesting.
The New York partnership policy. It's a great policy. But you do have to stay in New York. I mean, what it does, it's a long-term care insurance policy, but it's different than other ones because if you run out of the policy, basically, right, if it pays out for 2 years and you're still needing care after that, you automatically become eligible for Medicaid, and they don't look at your assets. So it really protects your assets. But to get that, it has to be New York Medicaid. So a lot of those people who have that policy will have to come back to New York to get their care if they need the Medicaid. And so you have to think of that ahead of time. Like, you wouldn't want to transfer someone right from one nursing home to another in the middle. So you have to anticipate that ahead of time.
Right. And do a little planning, you know. Like he can utilize the policy in different ways. And then it's also really understanding what needs qualify him to use the long-term care policy too, because the long-term care policies are oh my goodness, the language in them sometimes is so hard to sort of decipher out. So that's one thing that we, you know, when we're doing a long-term care plan with folks and talking to them about understanding things, is if you do have a policy, you need to kind of take it out, dust it off and read up on it, because you really want to understand what's in there.
And that's something I know you've helped a bunch of our clients with, is putting in a claim under your long-term care insurance policy. It can be very complicated for people to do that. And I know, Kim, you've helped our clients look at the policy and put in the paperwork to try and get the claim started.
Right. Or just help them understand, like, what the process is and what they need to do, because, you know, with many other things, getting sometimes the bureaucracy of things is just the red tape. It's so hard to cut through, you know.
Right. And another thing you often say at our seminars is you should use it, like, early on. Some people are kind of saving their long-term care policy for maybe for a nursing home. But if you're needing care at home, you should start it then, right, to make use of the policy, because, you know.
Correct.
Start the process early so you take full advantage of it.
Well, and I think a lot of times what people forget about their long-term care policies is there's an elimination period. And that right. elimination period is the number of days that you're expected to pay for whatever care you're receiving while you're waiting that out, right? And, I mean, some people, you know, very seldom do I find somebody that has a zero-day elimination period. You right. know, most people are in that 60 to 90 to even, you know, I've seen a couple that are 120 days. And that means you're paying for whatever services for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. And you never want to start that at nursing home, right? Because you're automatically spending $15,000 a month right off the bat while you're going through that elimination period. And even home care, you don't want to start that when you're utilizing 24 hours a day. You know, it's better to get through that elimination period when you're using, you know, 20 hours a week, or you're starting the journey, because that's a lot easier on your pocket than it would be if you had to pay out of pocket for 24/7 care. So lots of things to consider when you're
very good
doing
tip that.
That
not everyone knows about. Yeah, that's a great tip to try and, you know, think about it, start into your elimination period so that you can get the benefits later on.
Right. And then a lot of people kind of forget that their policy also comes with something that's called a waiver of a premium. And that means that once you go on claim, once you're approved, you don't have to pay that premium anymore. So it's sort of that win-win, right? Like the policy starts paying for your care and you no longer have to pay the premium. And a lot of these policies, particularly in the last couple of years, the premium's really increased. So anytime we can think about using that policy so that it frees up, you know, part of your, you know, spendable income, that income, that what you were paying for the long-term care policy premium can then go to pay for care while you're, you know, waiting right. through your elimination period. So there are lots of ways to kind of work it so that you actually get what you need. And so often we hear people say, I've paid on this for so long and I didn't get to use it or, you know, I left a large portion of it on the table or whatever. So,
right. Yeah. Don't be afraid to use it. Right.
Absolutely.
And you might as well get the help and use that policy while you can.
Yeah.
All right.
So I have a question for you.
Okay. And we may have to get to that after the break, but go ahead and ask the question.
How about it? Why don't you ask the question and then we'll go to break?
That sounds great.
Okay. So my question for you, Jamarie, is we work really hard with clients to do their advanced directive planning. And, you know, if somebody does a MOLST while they're still, you know, have their capacity, but then they go through a guardianship process, does that MOLST still hold through the guardianship process? So we'll chew on that and come back.
And while you're thinking about that, we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Hi, welcome back. This is Jamarie Schaefer.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we answer your questions about anything related to estate planning and elder law. And you can call in with your questions at 518-476-5900 and ask your questions. And we may have a caller coming in. I'm not
Jay-Marie, that was pretty good that you asked for callers, and look at this. We've got callers. This is pretty good. Right now we have Bruce from Saratoga Springs.
Hi, good morning, Bruce.
Good morning. I heard a rumor about trusts, and I figure maybe you could clear it up for me. In a here's the imaginary scenario, sort of imaginary. My mother's got is 89 years old. Her assets are very small. Okay, around that $15,000 cutoff point. And I thought about, getting a trust, for where she could put some of her money in a trust, and then she could pre-qualify for Medicaid. Well, somebody told me that the money that goes in the trust, when she passes away, that money's gone.
Oh, no. Well, I think it depends on the type of trust that you're talking about. So that type of trust where you don't get the money after death, that's the trust that you use for your income. That's a pooled supplemental needs trust. And if you apply for Medicaid at home and your income's over $900 a month, you have to put that excess income into a trust in order to qualify for Medicaid. And then you can use that money in the trust every month to pay for your expenses, but when you die, that you don't get anything that's left in that trust. The money stays in that trust and goes to the nonprofit. So my guess is that's the trust that you heard about.
Okay. All right. Well, it was kind of murky, and you've cleared that up. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts here, so...
There is some truth to what that person told me,
but it depends on the type of trust.
Right. There is another trust you can use for extra assets. So if you have too much money, like if she had more than $15,000 in the bank or in investments, you can put that money into an irrevocable trust, which is something that we do. But that trust can go to your beneficiaries when you die. Really two different trusts to think about, and that this is where it gets kind of complicated with community Medicaid, but one for your income and one for your assets.
Okay. Now, once it's in that irrevocable trust, can it be used for expenses if necessary?
Not like the income trust can. The income trust, you automatically can use the money in the trust every month to pay your bills. The trust for your assets, the idea is that you don't touch those assets and they're protected. So you don't have,
They would be there for your heirs.
That's right. You're saving it and preserving it for your heirs. Yes.
Okay. So you got two different kinds of trusts here. And, wading through this is difficult by yourself. So, okay. Well, you cleared that up.
Oh, thanks. And yeah, feel free to call us at the office with any questions you have, okay?
I will. Thank you very much. You have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, and we have another caller. We have Jane in Kingston.
Jane Marie, right? I forget. I've called before and I've spoken to you once. And I realized a couple weeks ago there was one, as I was still trying to get my paperwork in to Medicaid so I could get the trust funds, you had mentioned that there might have been a way I put the house in my grandson's name with me having the lifetime residency.
That's right.
So the two questions I had was, number one, can you still do it when you have a mortgage with very little or no equity built up? And then the second part was, since I haven't actually even gotten my Medicaid form in, if I do, it's not really transfer, but if I do the thing to the house in my grandson's name, is that considered the transfer of assets as far as the look back period for a community Medicaid?
So I'll answer the second question first. Those are both good questions. And yes, transferring the house to your grandson, even if you do keep a life estate, that is considered a transfer for Medicaid purposes. But the good news is, you know, for community Medicaid, if you do that transfer now when you apply for Medicaid before July 1st, there's no look back period. It won't matter that you transferred the house to your grandson.
I thought it was October 15th, and then I thought they moved it up to January.
They did, and then they moved it to April, and then they moved it to July. So it's constantly moving.
So if I get it in now.
Yes.
It's okay. All right, and go on.
So the first question was about, you know, the mortgage. And so a couple things there. So you could, right, put the house in his name, and you would have a life estate, and that would be fine with the mortgage company. However, when you pass away and your grandson inherits the house, he would have to reapply or do
a mortgage.
Right, he couldn't continue paying on the old mortgage.
That part is new. Okay.
That's kind of the only.
You can still do it. Okay. I apologize for interrupting. There's no look back period, so I could still do the trust now, and that wouldn't be held against me. And then I think, for me, the next part of that question, because I was going to call to make a phone appointment just to, you know, kind of go over that and then see, you know, and then get the approximate lawyer fees to do this, because I'd have to, you know, get that money up first. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Well, I was just
going to
say, call us. Yeah.
Okay. The next question, I think you probably need more information from me, is that I know the part with the pool trust is one where you hand in your bills, they pay it out, but if you die, there's any money left, it goes into their general fund or whatever it's called. But now, I don't remember. I think in one of your seminar or webcams, whatever, here, you said that the pool trust is a irrevocable trust?
Well, it is an irrevocable trust, but, I mean, you can use the money in the pool trust. So, I mean, you still have access.
Okay.
Right? So it's not that as restrictive as, you know, the other trust.
Okay. Of course, I can't remember the other question. Okay, so it would be just like I have pets, and I know I probably asked this before, and so a vet bill can be unexpected. I can, and you have to, you know, with my vet now, because they changed hands, you have to pay at the time of visit. You can't pay, you know, within 30 days. So if I knew, like, approximately the physical with blood work and whatever for my dog, could run from about $360 to about $600, depending on how extensive blood work I want them to do. So would I basically write myself a check for the amount for the vet, or do I, how would I get the money to pay the vet so that I have it at the time of the visit?
So sure, and that's a good question for the pool trust, and it really could be for any expenses you have, like groceries or, you know, utilities. One thing a lot of people do is to pay it on a credit card and then have the credit card bill paid by the trust. That's why.
I don't have a credit card. I just have, like, my bank card, you know, which you can use as debit, credit, or as a, yeah, right, forget, a check card. But I normally wouldn't have a couple hundred dollars like that sitting in my bank account, you know, for it. It would be money in there that would be part of the $8.95 or whatever that I would have for other bills. So how would I get the money for the vet?
In the details here, I know that if you talk to the pool trust company, they can figure out a way to do that. I think they had a way of helping you get a credit card. I don't know all the details.
I know. It's just that I wasn't eligible for one because my credit score is not that great because of all my medical bills. The cell phone keeps breaking up on my end. Thank you very much, and I'll call and make an appointment. Do you come down to the Kingston office?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Okay, have a good day.
Okay, you too.
And we have another caller. We have Claudia from Rotterdam.
Hi, good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Jane Marie. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I actually have community Medicaid for my husband. He lives in an assisted living home, but he recently was hospitalized due to COVID. And he's going to have to go into rehab, and I'm not 100% sure if he's going to be qualified to go back to the assisted living, or he might have to go into a nursing home facility. And at the present time, my house is in a trust for my adult son. But if I have to reapply for nursing home Medicaid, what steps do I need to do in order to take the house out of the trust, or what do I need to do? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So I guess you're concerned because the house was transferred into the trust within the past 5 years?
Yes.
Okay. So what you can do is you can take the house out of the trust, put it in your name, and because when you're applying for nursing home Medicaid, the house can be in your name because you're the spouse and you're still living there. And then you could get him approved for Medicaid. And then after he's approved for Medicaid, then you could go and put the house back in the trust, because then you'd be protecting it in case you ever need Medicaid in the future.
Yes. Okay. Now, if for some reason, well, my husband is already approved for Medicaid, but is it a different Medicaid if you're in assisted living compared to a nursing home Medicaid?
Yes, it is. It's one more level of scrutiny. You need to provide 5 years' worth of financial records, whereas for the community Medicaid, it was only, you know, your current financial situation. So that's why they're going to see everything that happened in the past 5 years and see if there were any transfers. You do have to reapply with the 5 years' worth of records.
Okay. So, and all of our finances, like if we have 401k and they're in his name, can I get any of that to survive off of?
So they're going to do a calculation of the income for him and for you for the nursing home. And the spousal amount that you'll be allowed to keep is it's about $3,200. Okay.
And none of his investments?
Well, you can keep $74,000 of investments in your name. So, I heard you, before I go into that, I heard you mention 401ks or IRAs. Those are exempt when you apply Medicaid. So you don't have to, they'll be protected. You don't have to do anything about those. And if he has a 401k in his name, he can still get Medicaid. And then on his death, it will pass to you as the beneficiary.
Okay, so basically just our tax returns, our last 5 years of tax returns.
Well, yeah, they need that and the bank statements. And they do need the 401k statements, even though they're exempt. So they need all those financial.
Okay. And are you, so I could just call the office and ask for you?
Absolutely, yes.
And can I contact you by email?
Yes, you can. If you go on our website and you click on my name, well, I'm just trying that here. Just save my emails there. That's silly. Yep, you can email me right from the website, okay?
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
So, some very good questions there. That was a busy little period there.
Yes, it was. And some good questions, too.
Some good questions, yeah. A lot about the home care, which is important. And if you want to learn more about how to plan to stay at home and how to apply for community Medicaid, we have webinars coming up this Wednesday. We have Aging in Place at 10 o'clock on Wednesday, and that's where we do talk about a lot of these different things that we're talking about today. And then at 2 o'clock, we have How to Plan Your Estate. And you can sign up for those webinars on our website. And you can also look at the, on our website, we have many of our webinars recorded that you can watch. So if the times aren't convenient for you, you can watch them at your convenience from your home and see them then. So a lot of people are facing that situation, Kim, right, where someone who was getting home care goes into the hospital and then they're faced with a choice of how whether they need to go to a nursing home or come back home. Right. And how do you help people through that that decision?
Well, it kind of starts with really understanding what the needs are. One of the first and foremost things that I look at when I'm talking to folks about developing that next phase or the next plan is how much care the individual is going to need. And really, it kind of comes down to some degree their geographical location because, as we said earlier in the show, care is very hard to find these days. And so the more remote or the more geographically challenging somebody is, it may not make sense to try to do a home care plan. The other big issue is, are there other support systems available for backup in the event that the caregiver can't come or doesn't show up or get sick themselves? So there are lots of things that go into consideration as far as what the needs are. And we've actually had quite a few folks as of late who have chosen the assisted living route because it's a guarantee that the care is going to be there, particularly in these times. And it makes sense for some people, even from a social aspect, because, being at home, it can be isolating, even more isolating sometimes than other options. And I spend a lot of time, when we know ahead of time, I spend a lot of time working with a discharge planner, either from the hospital, but a lot of times in the nursing home when they are making that home care plan to talk about the needs and how those needs can be met so that we can put the most comprehensive plan together for folks.
Yeah, no, that's important.
And I was going to say, most often, you know, more often than not, we're able to put something together that, that does work. And, you know, a lot of times the hang up is the rehab will say, oh, they need 24-hour care. And that 24-hour care can be met in many ways. You know, it doesn't have to be an actual body. It can be, we could put assistive technology in place. And that can be everything from a fall detector to a camera to, you know, an alarm system of some sort. Like, it can happen in many ways. We can be very creative in developing that sort of plan for folks. So I don't want people to necessarily think it has to be a body providing that 24-hour care.
Right. So that really, the hospital's concerned with is a safe discharge. So they want to make sure that the person is going to have a plan in place to take care of their loved one at home. But once they're satisfied it's a safe discharge, then you can go home rather than to a nursing home or assisted living.
Yeah. I mean, I have a client that I work with, and we're very lucky that she is surrounded by neighbors who are available, on a moment's notice. And, you know, she would be considered someone who would need 24-hour care, but because she's got this community of neighbors who are willing to, and her son installed cameras, and she does have, she has about 64 hours a week of care. But there are other times that there were some concerns, and between the cameras and having neighbors that are willing to just, on a moment's notice pop over, and she's got one of the, personal emergency response, the help I fall and I can't get up, but it's got a fall detector on it so that if she does take a fall in the middle of the night, it goes off and it, immediately notifies one of her neighbors that literally can walk across the yard and be there in, 5 minutes. So lots of ways for us to be able to put together plans for folks.
Yeah, that's a really creative way to do it. And, the technology can really help because you really just want to, sometimes you just need to check on the person a couple times a day, more than having someone there all day long. So you could do it, I would say, with cameras or things like that, or video.
Now we have cameras that actually you can talk to people through, her son actually lives in the UK, and he is a couple times just checked in on his mom and has seen that maybe she's doing something that's a little dicey, so he's been able to, call her either on the phone or actually talk to her through the camera. For some people, medication is a big deal, right? So having a camera where you can sit there and say, okay, open the blister pack or open, the med dispenser, and you can actually watch them take the medication because, particularly when we have folks with a memory issue, they'll say, yes, I took my meds, but they're not really remembering that they took their meds that morning or that evening. They're just, I take my pills every day,
Right, they don't remember, right?
Right, lots of ways that we can be creative in formulating plans for people.
Yeah, I think technology is really going to have a lot more to do with that going into the future.
Right.
But, of course,
Just to quickly hop back on my question before the break and before our great calls was, does a MOLST, so for those who don't know, a MOLST is a medical orders for life sustaining treatment. It's, a form that you do with your physician, and it's, for folks who have chronic conditions and it's the next step beyond the do not resuscitate, but your living will, your advanced directive. And so for someone who established a MOLST, say with their husband, and the husband passed away, and now that individual has a guardian, does that MOLST hold precedence over the guardianship or through the guardianship, I guess?
It does. The guardian would have to uphold that person's wishes in the MOLST because that part hasn't changed, right, with the guardianship. The guardian is taking over,
well, two things, taking care of the money and the finances and just taking care of that person where they're living, how, you know, providing care to them. But the most, that's really a living will that you're signing, a part that's a living will that you're signing. So that expresses that person's wishes, and that should be respected in the future.
Okay. I think that's sometimes hard, right? Because guardians, I think, get a little cloudy as to what their responsibilities actually are. And I think sometimes it is good to be able to remind them that they are still, you know, it is following through on the wishes of the individual, you know.
Sure.
Because guardians can be taxed with a lot, and sometimes having to make those choices if the person had a documents prior to the guardianship, it kind of alleviates some of that stress, I think, that they would have about needing to make decisions for folks.
Yes, right. Now, a guardian's a big responsibility. It does put a lot of weight on a person, which is another reason why we always stress doing your advance directives, your healthcare proxy and your power of attorney, and living wills, and then most is really included in that. So, to the extent you have those documents done ahead of time, they can be followed. I mean, if you have all of them done, you can avoid a guardianship. But if you don't have all of those documents done, you would need to have a guardian. So, which is, again, it's much cheaper and easier to do the advanced directives than to go through the long process of having a guardian appointed.
Correct. So, you know, always our motto to plan early and plan proactively, right?
Yes, that's right. Even if you're young, right? I mean, if you're, when you're 18, you need these documents.
Absolutely. I hear our cue.
I do. So thank you for spending the morning with us, and stay warm in the cold weather today. And we will be back next week.
Have a great day. Weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.